is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen, coming to you Tuesday, August 10th, 2004. Since September 11th, 2001, we have had intelligence that Al-Qaeda intends to launch more attacks against the homeland, stated Homeland Security Secretary Tom Ridge in July of 2004. He then went on to tell reporters that credible reporting now indicates that Al-Qaeda is moving forward with its plans to carry out a large-scale attack in the United States in an effort to disrupt our democratic process. And he then said, "We lack precise knowledge about time, place, and method of attack." 1 month later, less than 1 month later, because this was July 8, 2004, on August 1st, Homeland Security Secretary Tom Ridge went forward first, giving special briefings to some of the press, and then coming forward, creating a yellow to orange alert around areas in Washington, D.C. and New York for five specific buildings: the headquarters of the International Monetary Fund and World Bank in Washington, the offices of Citigroup and the New York Stock Exchange in New York, and the Prudential Plaza building in Newark, New Jersey. At this time, less than 1 month later, Ridge said, "We have specific information that there is going to be a major attack in the United States." Today's Taking Aim: The Great Deception, Preparing for the Martial Law State. Ralph?
From the beginning, this orchestrated theme about an imminent attack with specific targets in the financial district of New York and the central areas of the capital of the United States in Washington, D.C., had been prepared by months. In fact, since last December, a steady drumbeat about the inevitability of a major attack, and not merely that, but preparations to cancel the elections in 2004, with actual agencies being appointed to prepare the legal basis for the cancellation of the elections, and members of Congress actually having to pass a piece of legislation and a vote disparaging the prospect of the imminent canceling of the elections without good cause, quote unquote. But indeed, what has happened here is the implementation of everything that has been promised to us. Every minute of every day we've been told it's inevitable. The scale of the attack will dwarf the previous one of 9/11. The contrivance of 9/11, only the preparation for the terror acts of the bourgeois state, which are to follow. And yet, terrorists may use rental vehicles and helicopters was one of the headlines that Reuters gave on the 9th of August, 2004. Terrorists will use helicopters and rental vehicles, including limousines packed with explosives, to carry out the attacks, the FBI and the Justice Department and the Department of Homeland Security have warned. Three separate bulletins issued on Friday to law enforcement agencies nationwide and disclosed to reporters on Monday. The third, about terrorists using rental storage facilities to house bomb components and to assemble devices before attacks. The bulletins were issued after the raised terror threat level about attacks on the financial buildings in New York, Washington, and in Newark, New Jersey were proclaimed. Quote, "The U.S. government is convinced that Al-Qaeda is planning to carry out terror attacks in the United States throughout the summer and fall of 2004, according to the bulletin on rental vehicles. But when you look carefully at these reports in the press itself, there is," quote, from the Reuters report that orchestrates this theme, quote, "there is no credible, specific evidence regarding these aerial attacks within the United States, but the threat cannot be discounted." In other words, they never had a scintilla of specific evidence to provide, and as this became increasingly clear, that the imminent threats for the financial district of New York, on the basis of which a virtual martial law was in fact imposed, with military armed police randomly searching people, shutting down entire streets and areas, the absence of any concrete evidence became overwhelming.
Ralph, let's look again at the July press statements and the conferences that were held by Homeland Security Secretary Tom Ridge and the FBI Chief Robert Mueller. And this is, again, as I the beginning of July 2004. Ridge had made note of the upcoming Democratic and Republican national conventions and said, quote, "I have designated these events national special security events, making the United States Secret Service the lead agency for identifying and implementing protective efforts in these locations. I will soon travel to these sites myself to review the security measures being implemented." And as we know, what they tried to do for the Democratic National Convention was to restrict the opposition, the protest, marches, and rallies to a pen, an actual pen, a covered, limited-size pen, which would restrict the number of people attending those rallies.
Well, Maya, I was present at the demonstration at the Democratic National Convention, and we were leading the march with the banner of the Million Worker March. We should make clear to our listeners that these pens, as you described them, were cages. Cages with razor wire along the sides, with, in fact, netting and razor wire along the top, and with the platforms controlled by the police within this strategic hamlet-like absolute detention camp environment. And the police were to determine who went to the mic, at what time they went to the mic, and furthermore were to impose the obligation to have right-wingers along with any anti-war demonstrators at the microphone. The absolute abrogation of the elementary protections for freedom of assembly and freedom of speech in place in Boston, prepared again for subsequent demonstrations, and now with the current martial law measures that are in the wake of these contrived intelligence reports about imminent attacks, everything in place.
Ralph, as you mentioned, it was all very nonspecific, and as Ridge further went on to say, with regard to Homeland Security, the nature of the risk is very nonspecific, but I felt it was important, since there's general intelligence, that there may be an attempt to disrupt elections, that our colleagues be notified and we address what is now being discussed so that appropriate precautions can be taken. And then the Department of Homeland Security set up what they called very aggressive acts of prevention and protection. They also went on to say that Osama bin Laden and Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, who they consider top al-Qaeda leaders, are, quote, planning, overseeing terrorist activities on the Afghanistan-Pakistan border. And this came from also unnamed high-ranking intelligence official who added, quote, "Al-Qaeda is well known for its very careful preparedness and meticulous organization. They do a lot of pre-operational activities, and that's what leads into the end of July, beginning of August disclosures, because the public and the news media were quick to say there are all these vague notions of what is going to happen. Where is the evidence? Show us some evidence.
And that led to the disclosure on August 3rd in the New York Times. Reports that led to terror alerts were years old, officials acknowledged. Much of the information that led the authorities to raise the terror alert at large financial institutions in New York City and Washington was 4 years old, intelligence and law enforcement officials acknowledged on Monday. They reported that they had not yet found concrete evidence that a plot or even preparatory surveillance operations were still underway, unquote. So now they're acknowledging, under pressure, they have no evidence. There is nothing about an imminent threat other than from their own contrivance. But in fact, that they're basing themselves on what they claim is 4-year-old data from the year 2000.
Ralph, before that happened, let's go back a little bit, because the first thing they did was to announce that in Pakistan, as a result of a joint CIA-Pakistani operation in the middle of July, on July 13th, they had captured in Pakistan Mohammad Naeem Noor Khan. Now, at first, they didn't reveal his name. The New York Times revealed it on Monday the 2nd. And Mohammad Naeem Noor Khan, they said, was a high-level computer expert, a real hacker, and that he had, in the form of, quote, a daily log, information, and although non-dated, surveillance information, the most specific surveillance information with sketches and photographs and particular documents of these buildings, particularly the New York Stock Exchange in New York.
But again, Maya, the article that first surfaces Mr. Khan as the putative source, or one of the sources, says the following, and I'm quoting from Douglas Jail and David Johnston in the New York Times, "The highly detailed evidence of surveillance dated back 4 years, but it prompted the authorities to undertake a global effort to track down the unidentified suspects involved in the surveillance operations." And they said, "This is an off-the-shelf operation going back to the year 2000. As to Mr. Khan, the lack of," I'm quoting again, "the lack of knowledge about Mr. Khan demonstrates how hard it is for the U.S. authorities to penetrate Al-Qaeda," quote unquote. The lack of knowledge about Mr. Khan demonstrates how hard it is for the authorities to penetrate Al-Qaeda. The New York Times on August 3rd. Once again, old information, first claimed to be recent when pressed and demonstrating that they had no concrete evidence that they were in a position to establish. They then fall back on the claim, well, this goes back to the year 2000.
Well, let's look at some of that information. They said that there were, quote, according to an official who said he had seen the information, and this was revealed in on MSNBC, Terrorism and Security, on August 2nd. "Midweek pedestrian traffic counts of 14 people per minute on each side of the street for a total of 28 people. The official said he had not seen such extraordinary detail in his 24 years in intelligence work." And then there were photographs of the various buildings, photographs and detailed drawings. Tom Ridge on NBC's Today Show, when asked if he how confident he was of the information, said that on a scale of 1 to 10, it rated a 10. Quote, "It's as reliable a group of sources as we've ever seen," he said. And he then went on to say that the preferred means of attack would be car or truck bombs, although there was no information whatsoever that would give him any reason to make that conclusion. What's interesting about all this speculation is that it was later revealed that every piece of information that was on this computer could be obtained on the internet. It was all open source information. That, in fact, they were using canned photographs, standard photographs that anyone could find in a magazine, of these buildings.
And yet, you see, we have here, as I want to repeat, the sequence of events. First, the shutting down of the financial district and the introduction of militarized police, arbitrary searches, detention of people, pulling them away, closing off whole sections of the city in both New York and Washington is imputed to imminent threat data. When pressed for the imminent threat data, they are obliged to acknowledge, well, they're basing themselves on information about surveillance that occurred 4 years before. When that produces a firestorm of questioning about the timing of the release of this supposed information, if it's 4 years old, why now? Why not 1 year ago? Why not 6 months ago? Why not 2.5 years ago? No explanation possible. They then begin to shift ground, surface Mr. Khan. But even with the surfacing of Mr. Khan, in which they claim a new window has been opened into the methods, content, and distribution of Al-Qaeda communications. This, for us, is a potential treasure trove, said a senior American official and an intelligence expert, again the New York Times, and the documentary evidence contents reported urgently to Washington, elevating the significance of other intelligence information gathered in recent weeks. Much of that information from detainees in Afghanistan and Saudi Arabia and Pakistan, pointing to an attack on financial institutions, casing buildings in Newark, and Washington, even before the attacks of September 11th, and furthermore, on the basis of the New York Times report, soliciting access to the targeted buildings and considering how to deploy hijacked oil tanker trucks as effective weapons, determining how large an explosive device might be required to bring down the buildings, orchestrating based on supposed four-year-old information. Khan, a man whose arrest led the CIA to new evidence, his role as a clearinghouse of Qaeda communications, Khan, described as an elaborate communications system involving the use of high technology, again, attempting to shift now to a current figure. But what is the most extraordinary thing about this is that having now surfaced Mr. Khan as the supposed source of four-year-old information, we are now presented with the following. Not only was Mr. Khan the source, but Mr. Khan was a CIA mole. Reuters. Qaeda suspect named during email string. Sting. Anti-terrorism alerts based upon secret agent. A turned agent. A Central Intelligence Agency figure. Cooperating with the CIA. Providing them information. And indeed, putting this information out as a sting operation of the Central Intelligence Agency itself. The New York Times publishing the story that the man arrested now secretly in Pakistan and the source of the bulk of information was in fact working for the CIA. When we find intelligence that threatens people, we have an obligation to share that with people, stated George Bush. What they were sharing was their own operation.
Ralph, a setup, and it is a setup that the British considered one of the largest security blunders, so much so that Blunkett, in charge of British security, was outraged and went forward in the British press to complain of the U.S. operations. Quote, according to Reuters in an article by Peter Graf of Saturday, August 7th, the revelation that a mole within Al-Qaeda was exposed after Washington launched its Orange Alert this month has shocked security experts, who say the outing of the source may have set back the war on terror. In fact, what Mr. Graf doesn't realize is that the outing of this source was essential in order for the CIA, in collaboration with the Bush administration, as part and parcel of the Bush administration, had to come forward with some evidence. It was then revealed, of course, that this evidence predates even 2000, the events of 9/11, and that this evidence is open source evidence. Last Sunday, U.S. officials had told reporters that someone held secretly by Pakistan was the source of the bulk of the information justifying the alert. The New York Times obtained Khan's name independently, and U.S. officials confirmed it when it appeared in the paper the next morning. None of those reports mentioned at the time that Khan had been undercover, helping authorities catch Al-Qaeda suspects, and that his value in that regard was destroyed by making his name public. This is Peter Graf continuing in his article, Unmasking of Al-Qaeda Mole, a U.S. Security Blunder Expert. And this was in Reuters, of, as I mentioned before, August 7th. The British then hastily rounded up other so-called terrorism suspects, some of them who were believed to have been in contact with Khan while he was undercover. Now, Washington, according to Graf, portrayed these arrests, and as we saw in all the other press, these arrests were portrayed as a major success, saying that one of the suspects, Abu Musa al-Hindi, was a senior al-Qaeda figure. And some reports say that al-Hindi, who was also mentioned in the 9/11 Commission report, is actually a cousin of Mohammed Naeem Noor Khan.
So here we have it. What first came forward as imminent information based upon disclosures that were in the hands of U.S. intelligence have then to be admitted to be nothing of the kind but four-year-old evidence, then gets transmuted into a current source. The entire root and cause and source for the presumptive surveillance threats to institutions of a current nature, and then it's disclosed that in fact every one of these surveillance operations was the Central Intelligence Agency's own operation. That this so-called mole, the CIA operative who had been in their hands, was providing information that the Central Intelligence Agency itself had generated. Let me repeat that. The source of the information is generated by the Central Intelligence Agency through its acknowledged operative, a mole. Now, some of the reports are telling us, well, they turned him only in mid-July. That is to say, 2 weeks before they were shutting down Washington and New York on the basis of the information which was so imminent and indisputable, then acknowledging that it's 4 years old, now once again reverting to its imminence, it all turns out to be generated by the agency itself. A sting operation, a contrivance of the United States authorities, imputing this to one of their own. The most detailed and precise in 25 years, trumpets the New York Times. The information was more detailed and precise than anything we have seen. In my career in intelligence work, said the senior U.S. intelligence agent. Yes, anything they have seen, the Central Intelligence Agency's own operation is what they're talking about.
Ralph, you were referring to an article by Douglas Geel and David Rode. An intelligence briefing in the New York Times of August 2nd, Capture Qaeda Figure Led Way to Information Behind Warning. And also on August 2nd, this is a day when the New York Times orchestrated throughout the paper in every section articles about this warning, because Eric Lichtbau, who writes extensively on this issue, had an overview also on the 2nd. U.S. warns of high risk of Qaeda attack. And I think it's instructive to look at this article in particular, because he says there's an alarming information that operatives of Al-Qaeda had conducted detailed reconnaissance missions at certain sites that we've been talking about. But then he wonders, why then did they say that there's an imminent attack? And he again quotes from Tom Ridge, who said, "The quality of this intelligence based upon multiple reporting streams in multiple locations is rarely seen, and it is alarming in both the amount and specificity of the information." Of course, Ridge didn't announce at that time that the information was 4 years old and available as open source information that any one of us could get over the Internet. But it is added in this. Why now? Intelligent officials, writes Lichtbau, said they had no information to conclude that an attack was now imminent, and no specific indication about when one might be carried out. Now, this was information that Lichtbau was able to get from intelligence officials, yet Tom Ridge and President Bush announced that there was to be an imminent attack. And as a result, the New Jersey governor, James McGreevy, sent out 1,000 state investigators to assign them on the case, and all sorts of martial law aspects were put into place in New Jersey and throughout New York. So what was the type of information that these officials were looking at that Ridge would say there was a possibility of an imminent attack? officials, according to Lickwow, information that the threat information went beyond intelligence chatter picked up from intercepted communications or internet traffic. So what were some of the episodes that they were looking at? Well, one was the apprehension of a Pakistani woman in Texas who had a suspicious passport. A suspicious passport of a Pakistani woman. That is new imminent information. Then look at the second episode that led them to decide that they had to go to Code Orange. On a recent flight to Los Angeles, there was reporting by some of the passengers that there was an odd activity by a group of Syrian musicians. What was the odd activity? The Syrian musicians were standing up in the aisle speaking. And the plane was then halted. These were considered possible terrorists, musicians from Syria. It was later revealed that the air marshal on the airplane had noted, but he didn't come forward for several days until there was this entire hullabaloo about the intelligence operations, that the Syrian musicians weren't suspicious. They were just standing up and having a conversation in the aisle. Ralph.
Keep our focus here on what is really going on, brothers and sisters. Reuters. The Pakistani secret agent confirmed was working undercover in a sting operation for the Central Intelligence Agency, writes Simon Cameron Moore and Peter Graff, Pakistani sources acknowledged on Friday. Actively cooperating with intelligence agents to sting and entrap Al-Qaeda operatives, continues the Reuters dispatch. Quote, he sent encoded emails. He received encoded replies. He is our great hacker. He is a computer whiz, acknowledged U.S. agents. He has fully cooperated with us. The New York Times stated they had disclosed that the man arrested secretly in Pakistan is the source of the information leading to the security alerts. We have here a hands-on acknowledgement of the nature of the terror threats and of the character of these operations. Al-Qaeda eyeing copters and limos, reports CBS News. This information and the preparations for militarization of the police were sent to, according to CBS on August 9th, 18,000 state and local law enforcement agencies to be implemented wherever there is a, quote, densely populated area in the United States. Limousines, trucks, business vehicles, buses, limousines, anyone walking in these areas, anyone carrying any purse or briefcase in these areas, to be searched, to be detained at will, because they said the Al-Qaeda was preparing, quote, to spread chemical and biological agents in the ventilation systems of high-rise buildings, according to the FBI bulletin. They view helicopters as an attractive weapon, and their non-threatening appearance when at low-flying attitudes. Special focus on commercial and private helicopter operations, and on schools, and on buses, and on limousines, and on car and truck rentals, for any activity in which customers may be involved in moving into the center of New York or Washington. 18,000 state, local, and law enforcement agencies on martial law-like alert on the basis of a sting operation, on the basis of a central intelligence agency contrivance, on the basis of a faked series of terror reports on the, imputed to imminent sources, then disclosed as old and now acknowledged to be originating with the agency itself.
You are listening to Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman.
And Maya Schoen. Our program today, The Great Deception, Preparing for the Martial Law State. This is WBAI 99.5 FM in New York and on the internet at www.wbai.org. Again, our program today, The Great Deception, Preparing for the Martial Law
State. Tune to Hi-Fi.
It's 5:30 in New York City. Coming up at 6 p.m., the WBAI Evening News. Back to Taking Aim with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen.
And let's look at this great deception. Aside from the New York Stock Exchange, the financial center of New York, there were other references on the seized computer files that were going to lead to intelligence alerts, but the Homeland Security backed off because they were such vague references, they said. And that was the Bank of America building in San Francisco, the NASDAQ and the American Stock Exchange buildings in New York, as well as undisclosed buildings in Washington and New Jersey. All these targeted buildings, they said, were on this one particular laptop computer of Mohammed Khan, the CIA mole, and computer disks that were recovered in other raids in Pakistan. 500 photographs, diagrams, and drawings, some of them digital, they said. And as you recall, what was later revealed, as we mentioned before, is that these were open source data. As a result, though, these intelligence operations have called for security photos from the New York Stock Exchange and the World Bank and so forth that date back to 4 years. And I don't know what they think they're going to do reviewing old camera footage. Are they going to just target every Arab who walks past the New York Stock Exchange, anyone carrying a large pocketbook? What do they think they're going to see from these four-year-old security photos?
They are not intending to see anything. They don't care whether they're Arabs. They don't care whether they're children. They don't care whether they're people in wheelchairs. It has nothing to do with evidence. It has nothing to do with specific individual activity. It has to do with the fake contrivance of a rationale for shutting down democratic rights in the United States and preparing for the police state. On the same days that this is going on, the BBC provides a collateral and interesting report. Pakistan protests U.S. sting. The BBC on August 9th. Pakistan has protested to the United States over what it has described as an FBI sting operation involving a fake plot to kill Pakistan's United Nations envoy and impute this to Al-Qaeda. Islamabad called the operation bizarre and mind-boggling, which endangered the life of Munir Akram, Pakistan's permanent envoy to the United Nations, as the Pakistanis are saying that the United States in this sting operation was actually going to facilitate the murder of the Pakistani permanent envoy to the United Nations. Pakistan's foreign ministry spokesperson Masood Khan asked, why did the U.S. authorities not pick an American target instead? That's their concern. It is mind-boggling, stated the foreign ministry spokesman of Pakistan. Two leaders of a mosque in Albany were arrested on charges of support to terrorism. In fact, we're dealing with a sting operation. This technique is tantamount to auto-suggestion, endangering the life of our ambassador, stated the Pakistani foreign ministry spokesperson Masood Khan. What we are looking at here, as the BBC discloses with respect to the Albany arrests, which were much orchestrated in the press of the United States, a sting operation, an FBI plan to arrange the murder of the Pakistani envoy to the United Nations at the same time that this orchestrated series of Central Intelligence Agency police state lies about the threats to the United States in Washington and New York are being fed to every news agency in the world.
Ralph, what's interesting about this is that the English language Pakistani newspaper Dawn, which first reported this and then was picked up by BBC News, revealed that this sting operation of the CIA had been a plan to assassinate the Pakistan's permanent envoy to the United Nations. There is no reference in the U.S. press to the actual target of the sting operation. It was only mentioned that the people were trying to purchase the shoulder-fired missile. So it is interesting that the U.S. press has not disclosed the outrageous nature of this CIA operation.
Well, everything about it is outrageous, not just the target of an individual.
Oh, yes, of course.
Not just the fact that it's fathered upon these Muslims in a mosque in Albany, not just the fact that that these people are convicted and detained on the basis of fakery and of intelligence operations themselves, but that this is a terrorizing of the American people, that this is the preparation of our nation for martial law, that this is the prelude to the elimination of the elections and of democratic rights in the United States, that we have been seeing this orchestrated now month after month after month, and it is being implemented. And let's look for a moment at the Washington Post report on the response of elected officials in the capital of the United States. Street closing irks D.C. leaders. The police officers carrying automatic weapons patrolling the Capitol last night, shutting major thoroughfares in Washington, setting up 14 checkpoints, creating a huge security perimeter around powerful symbols of American democracy, amid objections from city leaders. U.S. Capitol Police Chief Terrence Gaynor said last night, First Street between Constitution Avenue and D Street, running between the two Senate office buildings, will be shut down indefinitely starting this morning. Key spots around the Capitol, the Supreme Court, all vehicles that cross Independence and Constitution Avenues, military armed police stopping people randomly and searching them and detaining them, checkpoints near the World Bank and International Monetary Fund, cars and trucks stopped, checkpoints on 18th Street, on F and G Streets, on 19th Street between I Street. D.C. officials blasted the Capitol Hill action, stating the closure and checkpoints lead to gridlock and shut down the city.
Ralph, the spokesperson for Mayor Anthony Williams, and Mayor Williams had objected to this, and what's very important to note about the closing of the streets and the security operations taking place in D.C. is that the police chief, Terrence Gaynor, did this over the head of the mayor and the council in Washington, D.C. He took it upon himself, which in fact is a martial law operation. The spokesperson for Mayor Anthony Williams stated, and this is Tony Bullock, "It scares people," Bullock said, referring to the security zone. "This is not Beirut," referring to Beirut, Lebanon. And Delegate Eleanor Holmes Norton, the delegate from D.C. to Congress, said she was outraged. Quote, "The arrogance of it is mind-boggling," said Norton, who has called Nukes conference to discuss alternatives. "Closing down a main thoroughfare must be the last option, and it became the first option here." In other words, the people in charge of the elected officials for Washington, D.C., were not consulted. Everything was done above their heads. In other words, the representatives of D.C. had no say in the matter. The police state took over. And Gaynor said that the police would be carrying more automatic weapons and shotguns when they patrol the Capitol. The overtime pay is at least $3 million a month, and as everyone knows, that means there'll be less funding for schools, libraries, and health care. And what this means to a city such as Washington, D.C. is the same as it means to a city such as Richmond, in the San Francisco Bay Area, where you end up with almost three-quarters of the general fund of the city budget going towards police and fire, leaving only one-quarter of the budget of the city, of the discretionary funding for the city, to go for libraries, for health care, for all aspects, social aspects of daily life. And this is what is taking place now further with these security alerts, these fake security alerts throughout major cities of the United States.
Here's the August 16th issue of Newsweek, disseminated by MSNBC. Al-Qaeda's pre-election plot, with an eye on striking America. Bin Laden's network is hard at work. It's called the President's Daily Threat Report, PDDTR, or in bureaucratic shorthand, the PUTTER. The document is so secret that only a half dozen people in the United States are allowed to see it. The PUTTER contains sensitive information, and a red stripe runs down the side. At 6:40 a.m., Fran Townsend, the President's Homeland Security Advisor and Counterterror Chief for the National Security Staff, opens up her red-striped PUTTER, receives a jolt. The United States government is picking up reports from its spies and electronic intercepts and liaison services of a Qaeda plot to strike the American homeland and forced the cancellation of the November election. In mid-July, the Pakistanis, working with the CIA, arrested a Qaeda operative named Mohammed Naeem Noor Khan, who was a source of the information. And do they tell us that he's a Central Intelligence Agency operative? Oh, no. But what they do, for four parts, is describe the pre-election plot to require the cancellation of the United States elections and to contemplate the ways in which it may be necessary for this to take place.
Ralph, a plot, they state categorically, but evidence of a plot, they give not a scintilla of evidence. Yet, we have Newsweek, as the New York Times, as Time Magazine state, and this is from Newsweek, from that specific article, quote, "There can be little doubt that Al-Qaeda is trying to strike the homeland before November 2nd. Now get this language, the American homeland. We are adopting the fascist language of referring to the United States. Quote, "We are in the midst of Al-Qaeda efforts to attack the United States on a scale as big or larger than 9/11, said John Brennan, chief of the Terrorist Threat Integration Center, the interagency operation that consolidates threat information and produces the PUTTER. But what, as we have revealed, is this information? Four-year-old open-source information that anyone can get over the Internet. And yet, here we have around the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank, every one of the employees, and this included 12,000 employees who attended a staff meeting at the World Bank, having their bags opened and being inspected. One IMF worker who bicycled to work hopped off to let a guard peer into the bag on the back of her bike. There were bomb-sniffing dogs, transit officers with automatic weapons dispatched. Police dogs roamed the orange and blue lines of the metro in Washington, and the same is happening in New York. This led me to look at an article that had been published in New York Magazine over a year ago, February 3rd, 2003. It's still available on the Internet, and I suggest everyone look at it. It's called The NYPD's War on Terror. And it goes into great detail about the police commissioner, Ray Kelly's setting up of what they call his own versions of the CIA and FBI within the department. These are the Hercules and Atlas teams, these paramilitary teams. It's a force of over 1,000 people of the NYPD And what Kelly has set up in the outskirts of New York, what they call the outer boroughs, in an unmarked red brick building that stands, it says, is an extraordinary symbol of Police Commissioner Ray Kelly's obsessive commitment to the fight against terrorism. It's the headquarters of NYPD's now two-year-old counterterrorism bureau, a high-tech post-9/11 world of the New York City Police Department, complete with electronic maps and digital readouts for cities such as Moscow, London, Tel Aviv, Riyadh, Islamabad, Manila, Sydney, Baghdad, and Tokyo. There's a global intelligence room, and the Police Department of New York has sent people to Lyon to work with the Scotland Yard, to Hamburg, to Tel Aviv, to Toronto. There are two police, New York police, on assignment at FBI headquarters in Washington. The detectives have gone to Afghanistan, Egypt, Yemen, Pakistan, and Guantanamo Bay to conduct interrogations. The Hercules team is a special forces type police unit, and it pops up daily around the city at the Empire State Building, the Brooklyn Bridge, Times Square, the Stock Exchange. And the teams arrive in black suburban sheets and armor-plated vests carrying 9mm submachine guns, and they get air and sea support. It's intimidation at its highest level. Ralph.
Today's date, not scared yet? Try connecting these dots, writes Ray McGovern, the former high-level Central Intelligence Agency operative. Quote, pre-election period, pre-election plot, pre-election threats. These words roll off National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice's lips no less than seven times Sunday on CNN's Late Edition as she discusses the inevitability of a major terrorist attack, and she stayed on message. I found myself wondering if these sources are any better than those cited repeatedly by Attorney General John Ashcroft when he launched his campaign citing, quote, credible evidence, credible intelligence from multiple sources that al-Qaeda will attack the United States before the November 11th on a scale, before the November election on a scale that dwarfs 9/11. In support of his warning, McGovern discloses, Ashcroft cited an al-Qaeda spokesman. The FBI was later obliged to admit that that spokesman was the Abu Hass al-Masri Brigade, which turns out to be one person with a fax machine monitored by U.S. intelligence. Quote, this fax is notorious for claiming credit for all manner of death and destruction, writes McGovern. This one-person intelligence-run fax machine with a fake organization called the Abu Hass al-Masri Brigade is the source for Ashcroft's continuous demonstration of the inevitability of a November 2004 election attack that will dwarf 9/11, repeated and orchestrated seven times on Sunday by Condoleezza Rice. A one-person, intelligence-derived fax machine. This is the nature of the real terrorist attacks on the United States, the real terrorizing of the American people, the ruling class that is frightened of the imminent economic and financial meltdown, that knows that the people of the United States are restive with this imperial occupation of Iraq, that understands that the cutback in social services is giving rise to a huge disaffection, 75% of the population now wanting that war in Iraq ended. Even greater percentages dissatisfied with the constant assault upon their living standards. Daily reports of the precariousness of the financial situation. This is a war on the American people. The terror begins in Washington. It's treason at the top.
Ralph, complicit, working with the administration, this corporate agenda, are the news media, Time Magazine, Newsweek, and with their direct orchestrating of this terror operation. For instance, Why America is Still an Easy Target, a book excerpt that appeared in Time Magazine of July 26th. which is a book by Stephen Flynn, America the Vulnerable, and he's a senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations, a retired U.S. Coast Guard commander, and Flynn has gone around the country explaining why, with more than 400 million people and 122 million cars and 11 million trucks and 2.4 million freight cars and 8 million containers that enter the United States and 15,000 sites of toxic chemicals, America is still an easy target. His proposal, of course, is high-tech security throughout the United States, which would cost hundreds of millions of dollars, which would come away from the social services of the United States. But I think you've discovered an important article from March 3rd, 2000, American PSYOPs at CNN, which talks about the entry of the Air Mobile 4th Psychological Operations Group, which is stationed at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, the home of the Special Forces. This is the PSYOPs plan, and not only is PSYOPs used throughout the Balkans and in Iraq and other places throughout the world, but it was disclosed in March of 2000 that PSYOPs worked directly at the news media, and it was exposed. PSYOPs officers, members of the U.S. Army Psychological Operations, their personnel were working at CNN headquarters in Atlanta and were working directly on CNN reporting and coverage of the war in Kosovo. We know that if it existed then, it exists to this date, and it's not only at CNN. The article reveals that the PSYOPs people work in the media throughout the United States.
Well, let's look at this, Maya, because the important article that you're citing in March on March 3rd, 2000, is certainly describing something that's ongoing. Because here, Friday, July 30th, 2004, in the Congressional Quarterly's Homeland Security section, evidence of Pentagon psychological warfare operations against United States citizens surfaces by Justin Rood of the Congressional Quarterly staff. Quote, the United States Military Domestic Operations Command is conducting secret psychological warfare campaigns to manipulate American citizens, despite an Air Force document claiming that these activities would not take place. Quote, the information operations against the American public, said Lieutenant Commander Sean Kelly, a spokesman for the Pentagon's Northern Command, known as NORTHCOM, based in Colorado Springs, confirms that we have a psychological warfare operation unit at NORTHCOM, and indeed that these operations are in full implementation, a deception plan. The Pentagon, while this is going on, positioned air, land, and sea forces around Boston during the Democratic Convention on an unprecedented level of military support. And indeed, total surveillance was tested, according to the Washington Times, on August 9th in Livermore, California. The 15,000 townsfolk from Liverpool had no idea they were under the guardianship of high-tech sensor management architecture as they barbecued food, heard music, and watched fireworks.
Ralph, we should mention that in Livermore, that is the site of the Lawrence Livermore Nuclear Research Facilities that is under the University of California, Berkeley.
The combined measures covering a radius of a mile and a half included encrypted wireless communications. The police were monitoring every reveler from a command post instantaneously. The project under the control of the Department of Homeland Security. And what does John Kerry propose? He states that Americans should do more to protect themselves. If we do that, we will set up neighborhood watches, a neighborhood watch system, so that we will be able to identify what anyone suspicious is up to. Millions of Americans should figure out what they have to do. We should pursue and research monitoring people and reporting on them before they act. Kerry stated that this is as important as the development of a missile defense system, which he also supports. Neighborhood watches, replicating John Poindexter's total systems control in the United States. That is the response for Police State America of the Democratic candidate for president.
That's right. Kerry said on August 2nd, on the Monday after these terror alerts, we cannot afford reluctance in the protection of our country. Coming forward with an even stronger stance than President Bush, supporting all this martial law apparatus that's going on. When we had done our two-part program on Police State America and our other programs on Homeland Security, and we spoke of the military operations, the test operations taking place in cities across the United States, particularly under the Clinton administration, let us note that these are not test cases, but there has been trying to accommodate the people of the United States to martial law conditions, starting in Washington, where we mentioned the police commissioner took upon himself to impose these over the heads of the elected officials and their positions on this matter, and in New York City, throughout New York State, and in New Jersey. This is the beginning of spreading, as Ralph mentioned, here in Livermore with a test case on citizens spreading martial law. Ralph?
The secret war. The Pentagon plan to provoke terrorist attacks. William Arkin in the Los Angeles Times, 10/27/02, disclosing what is called P2OG, which was a plan to provoke attacks by, in fact, carrying out U.S. operations and imputing them to terrorists in order, and this is a detailed and elaborated plan. We will follow upon it with part two next week. All of that which we have described today, the Great Deception, Police State America, is part of an overall plan, P2OG, to father upon others United States government operations themselves. What is at stake are our liberties. What is required is the fight back.
You've been listening to Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, The Great Deception, Preparing for the Martial Law State, will be on our internet site, www.takingaim.info. You can contact us for tapes or CDs at takingaim@pacbell.net or takingaim@wbai.org. We'll be with you next week.